The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Excited to have Jackie McMullen with us today. Jackie, of course, the Hall of Fame writer with ESPN. You'll see her on Around the Horn and on ABC Studio shows. She also writes for The Ringer. Jackie Mack, because I want to talk with Jackie about, you know, the Monty Williams Coach of the Year deal, Chris Paul MVP. She did a piece recently with Chris, and Jackie's just great. She's one of the voices of reason in the NBA and has been so for a long, long time. She's written books with Shaq, with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson together, with Gina Auriemma. So she's just solid. I'm looking forward to having the Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen with us. Kalen Jones from The Ringer, who one day will be a Hall of Famer, in my humble opinion. He will jump on board and talk about things around the National Football League, and the draft will chop it up with Kalen. That comes up at 10:35. Desert Financial Credit Union, that leads us off. They bring us, we bring you. The thoughts coming right out on a Monday, brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We have a throwdown going on at the Sports 360 company. Spurge is with us. So do you know what you're getting into, you challenged? Well, first of all, I'm the one that kind of stirred this up, in all fairness. So you decided to go hiking today. And you decided to go hike while we already have a hiker on staff.
I just wanted to get outside and get back in shape. I've been lifting a lot of weights and feeling like I'm out of shape, and I just wanted to start getting up and hiking. So now I got to challenge Claudia.
Where'd you go?
I went out to Piestewa Peak in Phoenix.
Did you do it?
I did it. I think I stopped once or twice. It was my first time doing it, and a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be, but it was a good hike.
Getting old sucks, my man. So like I would know, but like you would know. So seriously, so you're going to go hike with Claudia. Have you guys arranged this yet? Because I want full reports. I want to know if she's a half mile ahead of you, a mile and a half ahead of you. She's got to turn back around and find you. I want the whole deal.
Well, see, I got to start doing this every Monday a couple times first and get myself ready, get back in shape.
Monday?
I get in shape pretty quickly.
You're doing it once a week? What are you, nuts? She hikes daily, I think. She is always out there.
Yeah, I don't know if I can handle Claudia, but it's worth a shot. Yeah. It'll be some good video.
Worth a shot to your pride and your ego. That's what it's worth a shot to. What caught your eye from the sports weekend?
It was... big sports weekend. I mean, Suns losing to Lakers last night. That was kind of a reality check for them.
I get it. And I know what Monty said. Did you hear what Monty said afterwards? They sent a message and all that stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's LeBron didn't play. And it's a week and a half, 2 weeks to go in the regular season. These teams are going to play each other. These teams may open against each other. So why in God's green earth would you go out and show all of your good stuff? It's like sending Mad Bum out there to face the Dodgers or the Giants or the Rockies in spring training. Why would you do that? So I don't know. I just kind of looked at last night and said, like, I saw the Lakers threw confetti out. They had confetti falling.
That was weird.
Come on,
that
man.
Was really weird.
Yay, we beat the Suns. Campaign led them in scoring. Yay. Really? So, are you getting wound up about playoffs? I am.
I'm getting excited for playoffs. I've been watching more and more basketball. It's kind of how I always am. Beginning of the season, I'm not too much into it. Middle of the season, I start ramping up. But the last couple of days, I've been watching a lot of basketball. So, I'm ready for the playoffs. It's going to be a fun time to watch.
Do you think Chris Paul has a shot at MVP? I do not.
I would vote him MVP.
You would.
I would vote him. I would. That's not even just living in Phoenix. I would vote him MVP, but he will not
win. Because I'm going to talk to Jackie McMullen about this. Why would you vote for him and not Embiid or Joker?
So I'm voting for him. One, he has completely transformed this team from a team that was yes, they were 8-0 in the bubble, but even doing that, couldn't make the playoffs. That's how far behind they were from everybody. And there was a lot of young talent. But he comes in and immediately not just makes them a playoff contender. We were talking before the season, maybe a 6-7 seed if they were lucky. That'd be a big step forward for them. They're the one seed in the Western Conference. Jokic is putting up crazy numbers, but the Nuggets haven't done anything this year. They were a team that is usually a top seed.
They've had a lot of injuries. In the Western Conference. And, you know, the Suns are the two seed today. I think they're two back of Utah.
Yeah.
So, but look, Spurge, he's got Devin Booker alongside of him. That's a guy that could be given a couple of second, third place MVP votes. You could make that. Like, in the last month, has he been as good? No, but I think he's one that understands pacing. Like, what happened in Atlanta last week? Oh, my gosh, the real Suns showed up. No, they didn't. It's a who cares game in Atlanta on a back-to-back. I feel like, yeah, you could give it to point guards. Sure, point guards have won MVPs before. They are very valuable. But is this really the season where he's done more than Embiid? I think East Coast bias is going to creep in on this deal. So.
And Embiid's done a lot. The 76ers finally took their step forward that everyone's been waiting on for a while. He's the biggest reason why. It's not Ben Simmons. It is Embiid. So that's who I think is going to win it. I just personally would vote for Chris Paul just because of the transformation we've seen in the Suns. I know they were due to become a playoff team, but no one expected them to be where they are now. And Devin Booker's been playing really great and playing the same way he has. But Chris Paul's the one taking the biggest shots for the most part. We've seen other guys, Booker, step up, campaign stepping up sometimes. Yeah. But he's been the one sort of facilitating that, and I think that speaks volumes. But for him, I don't think he necessarily cares about an MVP either. I think he just wants to get that ring. You know, he's finally at that age where that's the one thing eluding him is a ring. And he's been a clutch player, but has never been able to really get it done when it matters most in the playoffs. So I think that's what he's more focused on at this point.
Did you watch Friday night against the Knicks? Were you tied up, or did you get a chance to see any of that game?
I saw some of the highlights. I didn't get to watch
it. It was a brawl.
That was a good game.
It was a brawl game. You know, I get upset when I see a game and the tone and tenor of the game is going to be chippy and nasty and it's not really being addressed as the game is unfolding. You know, that game Friday night, it was not all peaches and puppy dogs and puffy clouds. And I like that grit. And the fact is, it was a gritty, nasty, scratch eyeball game and the Suns still put 120 up on the team. Like, that's usually 91-89, which is what the playoffs are going to turn into. They're just going to turn into slow down, slug it out, beat on each other, and, you know, they're able to win in that way. So I thought that story for the Suns, what happened last night, was overblown today. But I get it. We're in Phoenix. The draft is over, and people are looking for things to talk about. Do you have a problem with the Coyotes blowing Rick Tocchet out on Mother's Day? Did you see that story?
Yeah, kind of cold to come out of there.
Kind of cold. Hey, Mom. Like, hang on, Mom. I got it. Hang on, Mom. Hey, Mom. I just got blown out.
Yeah, not a great move by the Coyotes. It's a move that was probably due, but not the right time. And
it was kind of typical Coyotes, I thought. Like, come on, guys. You're trying to do better. There's some good people over there. There are, but it feels like from above it. Well, if we get it out there early, no one will see it. It's Mother's Day. We're trying to bury the bad news. Like, come on, man. This is like, you just don't do that to somebody. I think that was a day where this morning, send it out. He's done. But Mother's Day, it's just unfortunate. All right. Anything else catch your eye? DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I mean, just showing, you know, tracks are a sport that you can't, these NFL players, a lot of them think they can go in there and DK Metcalf looked good, but still ninth place. I saw photos of high school kids in Texas running faster than a 10.39 and not winning. So that just shows you like how different that level of competition is. So we like to talk about the NFL a lot, but Olympic athletes are no joke. And what they do is sometimes almost more impressive. And you can't just pluck someone from Major League Baseball or the NFL and pluck them into one of those races, even though they're fast on the field, and go win it. So I thought that was fun. I was hoping he'd have a chance to make it, but you just look at his technique and all that. He just wouldn't stand a chance.
I just trained for a long time. You know, Spurge, the fact that he did it, because we have all these goofy 7-on-7 things in May and in April, and, you know, and it's track season. So here's DK Metcalf. Okay. See what he did here to Buda Baker? Hey, you guys need to come out to the track team. No, I have to go play for Team Pylon. And they got really cool outfits. And we're going to talk trash and we're going to play fake football because that's how we're going to get recruited versus, no, they're going to look at your track numbers. College guys ask, you know, what's his track? Did he run? And they go look up the track numbers. So I hope that it starts to have some of these high-end athletes say, you know what, I think it's kind of cool to run track. Eli Sanders, you know the Chandler football player. He's running track. He's one of the top guys in the state in the 100. I'd like to see more players do track. I'd like to see more coaches. There's some coaches that emphasize track, and there's some others that are like, yeah, no, we need to do more drills in April and May because we could lose our title. Like, really? So, all right.
If I'm a kid in high school fast, like DK Metcalf or Tyreek Hill, I'd want to run track because now you see, hey, they just tried out for the Olympics. If I actually understand what track is like, I could probably do that in the NFL one day and be that guy. It's an ego thing, but I think it's something that should come back.
No. What are you working on for the site? Anything? You got anything going? Got any stories?
Yeah, got a couple pieces. Going to have a one-on-one with Maddie Hackbarth, recap sort of her ASU softball season.
Impressive.
Tied the ASU home run record this year, so we're going to talk. She went through a lot of things in the offseason, so we're going to – it might be a starting the conversation type piece as well. We'll see where it kind of goes. I'm going to try to get out to the U.S. Disabled Open this weekend. Well, I know you're emceeing that, right?
I am emceeing that, and that is going to be a terrific event. It's going to be a terrific event. And Bob McNichols and the crew out at Longbow do great work. So good for you. Be brilliant. Get out of here. I got to run.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
See you there, Spurge. Good stuff, Jordan Spurgeon, getting it done. So a couple other things. The Diamondbacks stink right now, so I'm not even going to talk about them. But you know the Dodgers have lost 5 straight series, so I can't really go down the path of everything is bad here in Arizona. Everything was not bad here about a week and a half ago, and then they go on the road and get – the brooms come out against Miami and the Mets. And I get it, DeGrom, but DeGrom had to leave the game early. So, all right, Jackie McMullen is next on the Suns and Kalen Jones. I'm Brad Sussmad. All right, as promised, I want to bring you some more national voices about the Suns. It's been a long dry spell, 11 years, and they're going to head to the playoffs. Forget about what happened last night in Los Angeles. It's a late season blowout loss to the Lakers. I tend to just look at this and say, where are we at with Chris Paul as an MVP candidate? Where are we at with Monty Williams as a coach of the year candidate and James Jones as GM of the year? Enough of the pounding over the head. The late, great Joe Gilmartin told me once, Brad, sometimes you need to bring the sledgehammer. Sometimes you need to bring the fly swatter. Okay. And in this case, Jackie McMullen is with us. And I have a Hall of Fame writer here. I have someone who is well known, of course, with ESPN and does great work with The Ringer. Because I want a national view from someone who knows. Jackie penned autobiographies with Larry Bird and Shaq and done stuff with Magic and Geno and has just been everywhere. So none better than Jackie McMullen. How are you?
Thank you, Brad. I'm great. And I'm sure you're having fun with the Suns. They're fun to watch, right?
They are. Let's just put it the last 10 years. We were doing death clock out here, Jackie. We were doing the it's been 9 years, 8 months, 7 weeks, 3 days since the playoff game. And I was here in the Charles. I came here in 93. And, you know, there are so many good people around the organization. And to see it just turn into a dumpster fire was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
What do you make out of what's going on here in Phoenix?
Well, I do think it's, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they're good, but you have to start with Chris Paul. There's no question about it. I did a piece on Chris recently and spent some time talking with him. And you look at the numbers, you know, Devin Booker's a great scorer. We know that. He's, as Doc Rivers would say, a professional scorer. And DeAndre Ayton's this sort of nice young player that needs some time. And Chris Paul was the perfect person to drop into that situation because he called Book ahead of time and said, I don't want to be the leading scorer on this team. I want to make you as successful as possible. I think DeAndre Ayton in the piece that I wrote admitted he needed someone to step on his rear a little bit and kick him along. Mm-hmm. And Chris Paul is the best at doing that. And so if you look at their numbers, their defensive numbers, their offensive numbers, everything is significantly better. And I point directly to Chris Paul. He's an MVP candidate, a deserved one. I was talking with one of my members of the National Brethren. We both have a vote. And this particular person told me, I was, you know, agonizing a little bit over Jokic and Embiid, and now I'm voting for Chris Paul.
And why is that late in the season, do you think, Jackie? What's he doing?
I think it's because I think people, you know, early on said, oh, aren't the Suns a nice little story? Aren't they a nice little story? Chris Paul's completely reinvented himself, because remember now, he leaves Houston and everybody's thinking, oh, what a shame. He's kind of done. You know, he didn't look good at the end of his time there. He missed a lot of games, which was not normal for him. And as you know, he changed to a plant-based diet. He made some changes and sort of got him steeled to really prove people that he wasn't done, that he was ready to go. And then he gets traded to Oklahoma City, which is, by all accounts, a rebuilding team, and had really didn't even call him right away because they wanted to. They weren't sure they were even going to keep him. They were maybe going to flip him to the Miami Heat. So I think when in the early months when the Suns were doing well, they're like, OK, well, Chris proved himself in OKC. He's back to it. He's playing well. This is a nice little story. Mm-hmm. But I think they underestimated Monty Williams, who I think is one of the most underrated coaches in the league. And that's been true for many, many years. And I think they underestimated the effect Chris would have on the team. And I also think they underestimated, when I look at the roster for the Phoenix Suns, you know, Booker, Ayton, Chris Paul, they get all the attention, of course. But Mikal Bridges is a player that's just beginning. We haven't even seen the best of him yet. And when I was talking with Chris and Monty and James Jones, all of them went out of their way to mention Jay Crowder and the effect he's had on this team. You need veterans like that, who have been there, who have done that, who are gritty, who know that trap game. They can tell you about that in the locker room beforehand. Said, we're not going to fall into that trap. So I think as the season wore on and the Suns kept winning, everyone's like, okay, maybe not just a nice little story. Maybe these guys are legit.
When you look at Monty, what strikes you most about what he's done out here?
What I like, he's just so innovative. And I did a story on coaches' plays. I think it was a year or two ago. And I immediately called Monty because I've heard for years from other coaches how innovative he is. And he was telling me about a play that he wanted to run when he was in Philadelphia as an assistant. And they said to him, no, that's too crazy. We're not going to run that. And then he got to Phoenix and he ran it, and he got booked for an open three. So I think what I like best about Monty is he's not afraid to try things. And even if other teams think it's crazy, he doesn't. And clearly his rapport with the players is one of his biggest strengths. And one of the things that I found interesting that I didn't know before I did that story on Chris Paul was their 1 year together in New Orleans. Monty was a first year coach. Chris was a very young player. They really butted heads, and Monty kind of wanted, and they got along. They respected one another, but they had differences of opinion. And Monty said, I always thought I had to be right. And same thing with Chris Paul. We know that about him. That's his biggest strength and maybe arguably his biggest weakness. And so I didn't realize how important it was for Monty to have another crack at Chris Paul, if you will. And look at how they operate together. So he has great credibility and respect in that locker room. And that's super important, as you know.
Where do you see it right now for Coach of the Year with Quinn and Tibbs and Monty all being talked about?
A lot of good choices. I don't know. But they're all, I mean, Monty's very much in the mix. Tibbs deserves to be in the mix as well. Quinn Snyder absolutely does. You know, I always think Coach of the Year is so tricky because, you know, doesn't Mike Budenholzer deserve some talk? But we don't generally talk about teams that are supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's just always been the case. So I think Monty has a real shot. I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for yet, but Monty's certainly at the front of my brain because, you know, I just have great respect for him.
She is Hall of Fame writer Jackie McMullen. You can see her content on ESPN. Read it on The Ringer. She joins us for a few minutes. James Jones, when he was hired, Robert Sarver was mocked by people here in town saying, well, yeah, even some nationals saying, another inexperienced hire that's not going to last. He's turned out to be terrific. I loved him as a player. He was, to your point, a little Jay Crowder, a little bit of a grit guy.
100%.
And I think that has played well here. What do you make out of the job that he's done?
Well, James, the word I would always use whenever I talked with him, and he never played in his final years with Miami, but he was the first one I went to in that locker room because he was cerebral. He understood the game. He looked beyond the game. He wasn't a day-to-day guy. He always had a larger view, and that's what you want from your GM. So he was inexperienced, and of course, it was a messy exit for the previous regime, too. I think that always plays into it, but he has done an excellent job, and, you know, he's someone that, think about the experience he had when they're trying to decide, is Chris Paul a good fit for us? because Chris Paul chose Phoenix. The deal he made with Sam Presti was Sam Presti said, be a professional, which he always is anyway, help our young guys. And if you give me one really good year, I promise I'll move you somewhere closer to your family and to a team that maybe can contend. Mm-hmm. So it was Chris and his brother who went through the league and broke it down and thought, that's the place for me. Well, now if you're James Jones, it's your job as a GM to say, okay, we absolutely would love a guy of his caliber, but how will it affect the development of DeAndre Ayton? How is it going to affect Devin Booker, who should be our leading scorer, who should get most of the touches? Well, that was an easy one for James Jones. He's known Chris Paul 15 years. You know, they were friends and competitors. So I think there's an advantage when that happens.
It's kind of fun out here because you look at it from my view and even fans, longtime fans, it's okay. Is it Kevin Johnson? Is it Jason Kidd? Is it Steve Nash? Is it right. Chris Paul for talking about the best point guard in the history of the
Suns?
Oh,
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun conversation that has taken place here in about the last month and a half, where this community has started to come alive again about the organization and looking at the history and tradition and heritage and seeing where Chris ranks with Suns point guard. So that's been a fun little piece.
A pretty good list, you know?
Yeah. For
that's
sure.
That's a Hall of Fame list, all three of those guys, you know.
Before I get you out of here, do they have a shot this year? Or is this, you know, there's still no finals experience, not even Chris.
Right.
No experience on this team for postseason, Brad. So enjoy the ride. It's going to be a nice ride. However, where are you at on that?
I think that's a fair presentation. I bet Chris would argue with that. I think the key, honestly, to me is DeAndre Ayton. I really do. I think he's the X factor because I know what Chris Paul is going to give you. I think we have a pretty good idea what Book's going to give you. Some of the young guys off the bench, okay, maybe. But Chris, you know, Jay Crowder, again, he's been around. Saric, even though he's been around a little bit, you've got some guys that have been around. So it comes down to me, to the young big guy. And, you know, can he stay locked in? In my conversations with him, and I really enjoyed talking with him. He's a really delightful kid to talk with. I found him to be really entertaining. One of the things I asked him about some of the specific things that Chris Paul's been helping him with, besides the fact that he's just on him all the time and kicking him in the rear end, which he certainly acknowledged. But he said one of the other things was that Chris kept talking to him about things, positions you've never been in before. And how you don't let those positions overwhelm you. And from what I gather, this is a concurrent theme that Chris Paul has had with all the guys on the Suns. So I think he's doing his very best to prepare them for playoff basketball, because as we know, playoff basketball is very, very different. So do I think they're going to the NBA championship? I don't know if I'm ready to say that, but I will say this. This is an unusual year. There's been catastrophic injuries to almost every roster in basketball. Except for the Suns, really, right? I can't remember anybody out for a prolonged period. The Lakers, who knows where they're going to be? It looks like AD's coming back into form, which is good news for them. We don't know about LeBron. Schroeder's going to be out probably maybe until the final days. So you don't know about them. The Clippers have had injuries. They're in. I mean, Serge Ibaka hasn't played. I can't even remember the last time he's played. So it's a weird year. It's a year where a team like Phoenix might, you know, really make some hay. Utah, I think it's overlooked as well. And I do wonder, you know, if you're trying to slow down Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, who's out now too, another team that's had an injury, that might be a tough matchup. But I'm not ruling the Phoenix Suns out. Why would I do that?
But and it's like your point on Ayton, though, to your point, he's going to have to go through Jokic and he's going to have to go through Gobert in a series. And so we've seen DeAndre come in after his 1 year at U of A. I actually saw him in prep school. I saw him in prep school up in Scottsdale before he went to Tucson. And that's a young man that is just still coming around, trying to figure it out. And
when consistency. You go into his,
it's consistency. And I think that there's been some that have said, oh, we took Sam Bowie. And it's just,
I wouldn't say that.
You just have to relax a little bit on this one. It's a different era. Yeah. It's a different time.
Right. But he's important. He's the X factor. And I think Chris knows that. And I think that's why Chris has paid so much attention to him and maybe gotten in his grill a little bit. You think I make you uncomfortable? Wait, do you have to guard Rudy Gobert every night? Wait, do you have to wait till Jokic pulls you out and makes a fool out of you when he starts raining threes on your head? Right. So I don't know what's going to happen, but they're the best feel good story of the year. I think they're the best story in the NBA this season. It's no doubt in my mind. I've really enjoyed watching them play. I really enjoyed getting a chance to talk to some of them, which, as you know, was difficult during the pandemic here to get to. We don't get to see anybody, and to try to talk to someone over the phone is a bit challenging at times. But I mean, the future looks pretty good too. You know, Chris Paul's, what is he, 35?
And his deal August 1st is the one that fans are already talking about, you know.
Well, I can understand that. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think he sounds very happy to me. I'd be surprised if they don't work something out.
This has been enjoyable. I appreciate your time and your insight, Jackie. Thanks.
It's my pleasure, Brad. Thank you.
There's Jackie McMullen with us. You can find all of her content over on The Ringer. You can check her out on ESPN Around the Horn and other shows. We appreciate her time. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, let's turn our attention to the National Football League, and Kalen Jones with The Ringer is with us. All things around the NFL, and I'm sure you have plenty of opinions, but we have to start with Aaron Rodgers. Okay, what side of the street are you on this one, Kalen? Is it the Packers doing the right thing? Is it Aaron? He has every right because he's Aaron bleeping Rodgers. Where are you at on this?
Well, I mean, on that side, in terms of like whether or not I'm with Aaron Rodgers or with the Packers, I think I'd side a little bit more with Aaron Rodgers just because I understand where his frustration is coming from. At the same time, I do, you know, I understand that he signed a contract that makes him, you know, the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, that said, like, he should end up playing out the deal. But I also understand at the same time, like, the frustration, like, where you as a quarterback, or not even just as a quarterback, franchise player, someone who should be having input on the direction of the franchise when it's not being fully considered, or at least there's the fake attempt of saying, hey, we're going to include what your opinion is, but we're completely going to disregard it. When you have that kind of stake within the franchise, to me, you're, you know, what you want the direction of the franchise to be to help what you feel is the best way to maximize your window as a player and your time as a Green Bay Packer should be better. I mean, not just communicated and expressed, but understood and taken for, you know, not taken for granted. So I think the Packers here, especially, you know, general manager Brian Gutekunst, like, I think there's been a mistake on his end of saying, okay, we're going to, you know, take what Aaron Rodgers is doing. We see what he's done. We're going to let him speak, but we're not going to listen. I think there's a difference from listening and understanding what someone is saying.
You know, it's interesting. Aging players, it just doesn't go well. I remember when Steve Nash was at the end with the Suns and he couldn't move, and Luis Gonzalez couldn't swing a bat or throw a ball with the Diamondbacks, and yet they're heroes. Aaron Rodgers, on the other hand, is still slinging it. He's still winning games, and right, they still don't draft wide receivers in Green Bay. And it's like, I know there's not much recourse. It just feels like he could handle it better than telling teammates and not thinking that it's going to get out.
Right. And that's the weird, that's the interesting part of it, right? Like, how it's being handled, because, you know, there's dysfunction on your end. Your response, you know, as a human being, you could take it from football or anywhere else where you're dealing with family or not, you know, like, your response as a human being is, do you, you know, kind of put flame, like, add more fuel to the fire, or do you try to put it out? And the way that, you know, it was handled was really, you know, set ablaze to everything in sight, especially for the news to drop on draft day for Aaron Rodgers go through Adam Schefter, and then for the reports to come out that, you know, apparently players and teammates have heard from Aaron Rodgers that he's planning to not come back next year. I mean, it's really interesting how it's not only happened and unraveled, but the timing of everything is really interesting too. But at the same time, you can understand why Aaron Rodgers would go about that way, right? Like, the only way to really get someone's attention sometimes is to set everything in place, because they won't understand that there's a fire that's getting ready to start. And, you know, unfortunately, it's come to this point where everything is kind of set on fire and you're kind of, you know, wondering when it's going to be put out. I'm not sure what direction, you know, the Packers need to go in other than, you know, really listen to Aaron Rodgers. I know that apparently he wants people to be removed, or at least, you know, handled position wise, like within the upfront of the office. But I think they're in a really funny situation. But that being said, I think that can also be resolved fairly easily too.
So I'm going to switch gears up on you on this one and stick with the Packers from this standpoint. Let's say Aaron is not back and they crash and burn. I'm looking at a team in that division that is figuring things out, in my opinion. That's the Detroit Lions. So for whatever reason, the Cardinals have been playing the Lions. It feels like every year I see them come in here and they're not good. They stink. They fire their coach. They turn the thing upside down. Mm-hmm. What do you make out of the Lions as maybe a team in the NFC that is starting to do this in my opinion. You're like, Brad, what, have you lost it this morning? What do you think of Detroit, Kalen?
No, I'm with you. I think that Detroit, it's going to be a long rebuild. I don't think that they're going to miraculously turn into a 10-win team next year, but I like the direction that they're going. And Brad Holmes, their general manager, I think he had an amazing draft this last week. What he has done in terms of establishing a culture, especially when you talk about the job that Dan, or at least the identity that Brad, or that Dan Campbell, their head coach, wants to establish. You know, we give him a lot of flack for, you know, his soundbite where he said, you know, we want a team that bites kneecaps off, right? Everyone gives the Lions flack for that. But when you look at the coaching staff that they put together, there are a lot of former NFL players. There are very veteran assistant NFL coaches, guys who have experience. In addition, when you talk about Anthony Lynn and Aaron Glenn, and then when you look at the roster that they're putting together, you look at the draft, they drafted a bunch of guys who are kind of embraced that mentality of we're going to destroy everything that's in front of us. And it really sets a foundation for what your culture inside of a locker room is going to be like. I think Dan Campbell, again, that soundbite makes him look like the face. You know, he takes all the flat in the heat, but it allows Anthony Lim and Aaron Glenn to do their thing as far as being position or assistant coaches and handling their players and whatnot. And I think when you look at the standpoint of the roster being so young, I know Jared Goff, I know people are, you know, questionable whether or not he's a franchise quarterback. There's 2 years of runway for you to determine whether or not he's that guy for your franchise while you continue to build the rest of it around him and potentially end up replacing him with another star passer. So I think that the rebuild is on the up and up. And I do think the trajectory is upwards. Like you said, Brad, I just don't think, you know, you're not going to see a 10-win Lions team or a juggernaut immediately out of the gate. I'd be surprised, but also they have pretty good coaching staff. So maybe not. Maybe it's not completely out of question.
Kalen Jones with us at The Ringer. You can check out all of this content at The Ringer, getting it done around the National Football League. Okay, smart guy. What do you make out of what's going on here? I mean, is this thing going the right trajectory, or are you on my side of the street, Mr. Jones, where this is about time to start saying, Cliff, can you get this thing turned around? And Kyler, are you really the franchise quarterback?
Yeah, I lean with you. And I know I've written a few times about it actually at The Ringer. Like, it's really interesting with the Cardinals because you have a team and a franchise quarterback, like you mentioned, Kyler Murray, that really should be, further along than where they went last year. I know that midway through the year, it looked like they were going to be in contention for not only the playoffs, but potentially the top NFC seed. And then for them to completely go and miss the NFL playoffs altogether was completely concerning. And I think that this year specifically for Cliff is going to be big in regards to him proving that, you know, you can take that franchise to the next step. They've invested a lot in veteran players, which kind of surprised me. Forgive me. It was weird that, you know, you didn't see them go for some, I guess, younger players and maybe even start talent that could help them in regards to expanding the playbook and making sure that there are better playmakers surrounding Kyler Murray. I know that you're still trying to figure out whether Larry Fitzgerald is coming back. I believe that AJ Green can step in and provide a solid veteran presence. I just don't know if on the field how much he's going to be contributing. I like what the Cardinals did in the draft, especially in the addition of Zaven Collins. I think that he can be I've seen people compare him to KJ Wright, which, you know, as a Cardinals observer, you know how talented KJ Wright has been with the Seattle Seahawks in terms of being a dominant pass defending linebacker. And I think that him having a defined role within that defense alongside Isaiah Simmons, should he have a more defined role, be more acclimated into the NFL after his first year, which is kind of up and down, I think that the Cardinals still have a chance, especially in the NFC West. They have enough talent. Whether or not it's, you know, they hit immediately this year and capitalize on some of the older veterans that they've invested in, I don't know whether or not that part of the plan is going to play out. But I think it does come down to whether or not Cliff Kingsbury can, again, take that next step as a head coach, be more expansive with his playbook, and be more willing to use his player in different positions. Like the fact that, again, DeAndre Hopkins was in one side of the field for 90% of his snaps, ran like maybe five different route combinations all season long. Use him as a weapon. Like there's definitely things that Cliff Kingsbury, I think, can take the next step in his coaching progression to get the Cardinals to the next step. And there's definitely opportunity for it in the NFC West, as talented as that division is.
Okay, take Trevor Lawrence out of the equation. I can even take Zach Wilson out of the equation. Which quarterback are you looking at saying, this one's going to hit, this year? And which one are you saying, man, this guy, he landed in the wrong spot? It doesn't even have to be the first round guys, Kalen. You follow Draft Inside now. You may look at what these quarterbacks say. This is going to be a good one to watch.
Well, one that I'm really interested in watching that probably doesn't fit that first round mold is Kellen Mond. I know that, again, that wouldn't be this year. That would probably be 2-3 years down the road. But I'm very curious to see what his, you know, drafting impact, how that impacts Kirk Cousins. I know that his contract is running up soon. He's entering his mid-30s. I know that he, as a player, there's kind of a limit as far as what he's able to do in terms of on-field capability. So I think Kellen Mond, someone who has that athleticism, has that rocket cannon arm, and played at a very high level when he was at Texas A&M, nearly led them into the college football playoff last year. We saw his growth over each of the 3 years that he, or excuse me, 3 or 4 years that he was at Texas A&M. For him to take that next step and to get that opportunity to sit for a little bit behind Kirk Cousins and, you know, kind of get familiar with Gary Kubiak's offense, which is a pretty QB-friendly system, I think that eventually down the road, he could be a really interesting player to watch. And in that same mold, I believe the guy that was taken right before him, Davis Mills out of Stanford, he's a guy that's in a position where I'm like, wow, that is a really interesting fit with the Texans, because obviously to Rod Taylor, it seems like everywhere he goes, he ends up, you know, getting replaced by a young rookie quarterback. And for the Texans to use their first draft pick of the 2021 draft on a quarterback who was a former five-star, it seems like NFL guys are really high on his potential down the road. If he gets thrown into the fire immediately or sooner than we probably expect, I'd be really curious to see how that works, because, I mean, obviously he had his last season at Stanford, but he has not really been healthy throughout or really had that much playing time and didn't beat out KJ Costello, who ended up transferring over to Mississippi State for much of his career. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out. It doesn't seem like it's the best foundation for a rookie quarterback to step into, but again, we'll see. Nick Caserio's in his first season in Houston, so there's still time to, you know, turn the ship around, I guess. But it's a really interesting spot for a rookie quarterback to be asked to come in there and try to redirect everything. I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
Okay, before I get you out of here, Deshaun Watson, what do you make out of it as we sit here in May? Where do you think this ends up coming September, October?
Yeah, you know, it depends. Again, like, obviously, you know, it comes down to how the lawsuits play out. I think if the NFL were to put him on the commissioner's exempt list, I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't play at all this year. I think that, you know, the Texans obviously seem like they're ready to move on. And it seems like even though there has been reportedly like NFL teams are monitoring what his market will end up being down the road, I don't see how he ends up playing again in Houston. I'd be very shocked at that.
Good stuff. Way to bring it today. We'll let you go off that. Kalen Jones, thanks for the time.
Of course, Brad. Thanks for having me, man.
And we're back with more after this timeout.